last time I was here, I had some jokes about Groundhog Day. So I have some jokes about getting old. Do you want to hear it, Benny? Or? Oh, I know. How are the stars like false teeth? They both come out at night. Okay. Retirement is the best thing that has happened to my brother-in-law. I never know what day of the week it is, he explains. All I know is the day the big paper comes, I have to dress up and go to church. The big paper. Do any of you get the big paper on Sunday? Saturday. Do you go to church on Saturday? Well, Seventh-day Adventists. At age 70, my grandfather bought his first riding lawn mower. This thing is great, he bragged to my brother. It took me only an hour and a half to mow the lawn. It used to take your grandmother 2 days. So that's it. Okay. I suppose I should be talking about love. I know the other ministers are doing that because it's Valentine's weekend, but I'm going to talk about getting old. I don't know why, but it just seems I had my birthday. I'm 67. So, yeah, so there you go. And we're all getting older. We don't go the other way unless we're Benjamin Bottom. I think he went the other way. But so gives you pause to think about aging. And George, I appreciate that reading. You did a terrific job. Next time I'll give you something from Leviticus, or Numbers maybe, as I promised. So. This is the other scripture. It's from Psalm 92. And a couple of weeks I shared that with you. It was the conclusion of the sermon. The righteous, they flourish like the palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the house of the Lord. They flourish in the courts of our God. In old age, they still produce fruit. They are always green and full of sap, showing that the Lord is upright. He is my rock. There is no unrighteousness in him. And that's the key thing in that particular reading, always green and full of sap. Isn't that a remarkable way of putting the human being and how we age? It just feels right. I know sap is sticky, but I get sticky too. Always green and full of sap. It's a beautiful way to describe aged trees and righteous elders. The psalmist doesn't say that growing old and dying will not come to the righteous. The psalmist does say that those whose lives are infused with doing justice, acting in love and forgiving and being humble, these people will flourish. These people will be worthy of God's image. And while we are made in God's image, we are all made in the image of our elders. That is, unless we die young, we will die old. And to capture the essence and the wisdom and the experience of our elders by allowing for their participation in our world is essential. Life is to have any meaning at all, any value. We have to be accessible to our elders, willing to perceive and receive what they have to offer us. The young tend to live with the illusion that life goes on forever. And though we think that we look the same, bodies decay. All you have to do is look in the mirror, take a selfie, look at old high school pictures or at decades old picture albums and portraits. I keep these on well, on my desk in the office and next door, and I keep these at home just as reminders of the way things used to be. Not all of us will live to the age of 103 like good old Kirk Douglas. And even this once handsome gladiator, Spartacus, did not go gently into that good night, not physically at least. While we may turn away from those aged living in retirement facilities, nursing homes, closed off from the world, sooner or later they will intrude upon us because they are paving the way for us. They are our future. Compassion and caring for our elders, this will bring us closer to God. The earlier scripture from Luke, and George read that, it focuses on Simeon, a righteous and devout old man. In fact, when Rachel and I were looking for bulletin covers, I looked at that picture, and that's why I have that. That's Simeon to me. That's Simeon right there. So I put him on the front cover. Simeon, instead of desiring security or honor or prosperity before his death, he wanted to see the fulfillment of ancient prophecy in the child Jesus. In the story, God comes to us in both child and elder. The theme of old man who anticipates the future greatness of a child was also very much a part of other literature, including Hindu literature and Buddhist literature. Children fresh from God and elders aging into God are religious themes of all the world's great religions. Likewise for us, creating spaces for the experience of becoming old, this also brings us closer to God. As our own Don Liebau has discovered, I believe, by rocking those babies at the Cadillac Hospital, bringing him closer to God, isn't that right? At the other end of life, we can inhabit God's Spirit by our listening presence with those who have so much to share about themselves. The key word is listening, which is sometimes very difficult to do. As Henri Nouwen says, when we are primarily concerned with giving old people something to do, offering them entertainment and distractions, we might avoid the painful realization that most people, no matter what age, do not want to be distracted, but heard, not entertained, but sustained. And this is a book I've been reading by Henri Nouwen. I think I'm pronouncing his name in the proper way, the French way, at least. It's a book that I was reading just leading up to my birthday called Aging, the Fulfillment of Life. And he explains that there are two unique characteristics of a caring human being. Poverty, compassion. Poverty, compassion. Poverty is the quality of the heart, he says, which makes us relate to life not as property to be defended, but as a gift to be shared. Poverty is the constant willingness to say goodbye to yesterday and to move forward into the unknown future. Poverty is the inner understanding that the hours and days and weeks and years do not belong to us, but are the gentle reminders to give to not only love and work, but to life itself and to those who will follow us, who will take our place. He explains that caring for the aged means that we allow our elders to make us poor by inviting us to give up the illusion that we created our own lives, and that nothing can take that away from us. This poverty, this detachment from ownership, or as Alan Watts would say, finding wisdom in our insecurity, can restore freedom to receive the old stranger into our lives and build a new relationship as wise companions. And to be a caring person, compassion is also necessary. compassion makes us notice the balding right here, the balding head and the decaying teeth. I don't know, I just went to the dentist, but they're doing better, or at least that's what she said. Feel the weakening grip, the wrinkling skin, and sense the fading memories and the slipping thoughts, not as a proof of the absurdity of life, but as a gentle reminder that unless a grain of wheat falls on the ground and dies, it remains only a single grain. But if it dies, yes, it yields a rich fruit, a rich harvest. Compassion makes us break through the distance of pity. It brings our human vulnerabilities into a healing closeness to our aging brothers and sisters. Compassion does not take away the pain and the agony of growing old, but offers a place where weaknesses can become strengths. Thomas Merton called compassion the purifying desert in which we are stripped of all our false differences and enabled to embrace each other as the children of God. Just as people with disabilities should remind us of our limitations, the paraplegic, our physical struggles, the blind, our lack of vision, the deaf, our inability to attentively listen, the mentally ill, our psychic struggles. So our elders will remind us that we are all getting older. When we allow our world to be divided into young, middle-aged, and old, we remove opportunities for apprenticeship. And while books and classes and studies in school are foundational in education, when one works in the field with a mentor, the practical education begins, and it should never end. My father said that his seven-year apprenticeship with three elders in the field of forensics, this prepared him for a career that lasted his entire life. And my three-year field education experiences in a variety of churches with six United Methodist clergy who were young, middle-aged, and aged, as one was actually going to retire in a year. They prepared me for a career that has lasted my entire life, too. In fact, maybe I shouldn't say this, but the three youngest ministers who served as mentors, sort of mentors for me, they are close to my age, they were very energetic, but there was a limited education. Here's another point. My field education, it was intergenerational. No matter our age and whether we are aware of it or not, we are always being educated by others. How much can the generations learn from each other? Growth of men and women takes place by creative interaction within the generations. How do we learn to be a father and grandfather or a mother and grandmother, but through interactions with our own father and mother, grandfather, grandmother? And while Friends was for so many a cute sitcom, it was lacking in the area of intergenerational experiences. In my day, and I'm going to sound old here, my family watched a show called The Waltons. You've never heard of it, I'm sure. The Waltons, it had grandpa, grandma, and dad who wouldn't go to church, and mom who would, and the kids saying goodnight to each other, goodnight, John boy. When the real-life character of grandma, when she experienced a stroke, they wove that disability into the storyline. Do you remember that? To continue in his book on aging, Henri Nouwen says that there are two main characteristics of caring for the elderly. We should understand acceptance and confrontation. And he asks these questions. What does caring mean when we think of the many people for whom growing old has become a way into darkness? What is there to say to men and women who feel forgotten and lonely and who are approaching death as the only way to escape? How do we listen when there are no words of joyous memories, happy events, growing life. How do we respond to those who feel that all their fears but none of their hopes have been fulfilled? When we understand our lives in terms of accomplishments and fame, power, wealth, or when degrees on the wall, certificates of achievement define our being, in the end, something will be missing. The truth is, there will always be those, I'll call them replacement killers. There is a great evil in a society which overrules love with power, undermines generosity with competition, where our lives are determined not by our being, but by who our friends are, or whether or not we have any so-called royalty in our families. When we come to the end of our days, well, what really matters? So, Nguyen says, when something and someone resides there in that deep darkness, it does not make any sense to point to little consoling events in the past which can be held on to. It doesn't make sense to say, yes, I see you are miserable, but look at your happy children, the people you helped, the things you left behind. That only increases guilt feelings, denies the reality of the experience of failure. The only hope is in the simple fact that someone who dares to listen and to face the failings in life and its naked reality will not run away, but say with a word, a touch, a smile, or a friendly silence, it's true, you had only one life to live, and it cannot be lived again. However, I am here with you, and I will always care. And finally, confrontation. This is an important element of caring because it pulls out all the stops, creates a distinct vulnerability, and it opens up trust and honest conversations about the illusion of immortality, out of which the rejection of old age and death comes forth. When I conduct a funeral, or when I conduct a memorial service, I use words from a book called The Gates of Prayer. These are the words I use. We are assembled with our family and friends in the shadow that has fallen on their home. We raise our voices together in prayer to the source of life, asking for comfort, asking for strength. We need light when gloom darkens our home. To whom shall we look but to the Creator of light? We need fortitude. We need courage when pain and loss assail us. Where should we find them if not in the thought of God, who preserves all that is good from destruction? Who among us has not passed through trials and bereavements? Some bear fresh wounds in their hearts. They feel more keenly the kinship of sorrow. Others, whose days of mourning are more remote, still recall the comfort that sympathy brought to their sorrow and to their hearts. All things must pass. All that lives must die. All that we prize is but lent to us, and the time comes when we must surrender all of it. We are travelers on the same road that leads to the same end. Henri Nouwen says, if it is true that people age the way they live, our first task is to help individuals discover lifestyles in which being is not identified with having. Self-esteem does not depend on success, and goodness is not the same as popularity. Care for the aged means a persistent refusal to attach any kind of ultimate significance to grades, and to degrees, and to positions, to promotions, or to rewards. This care, it requires a courageous effort to keep our elders in contact with their inner selves, where they can experience solitude and silence as potential recipients of the light. So, confrontation needs to be with self as well as with others if we are to be true intergenerational apprentices, learning from our elders, and therefore to be recipients of the light. Well, what a toe-tapper of a sermon, huh? Are we all happy now? Why is John doing a sermon on aging and death over this Valentine's weekend? Well, it has to do with love too, doesn't it? I mean, we love one another within the generations. And when you look at the reality of love, love is limited, isn't it? Just as our lives are limited. In this, there was a Jewish author, maybe one of you can help me. The name of the book is My Name is Asher Lev. Oh, okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Penny. My name is Asher Lev. What I know about it, it's a Jewish boy in Brooklyn, a painter, who experienced all of these things, acceptance, confrontation in the words of a caring father. But I found this particular quote, and I want to share it with you. I think it's a conversation in the book. And here's how it goes. I remember my father. He was looking at a bird lying on its side against the curb near our house. Is it dead, Papa? I was 6 and I could not bring myself to look at the bird. Yes, I heard him saying in a sad and in a distant way. Why did it die? Asher, everything that lives must die. Everything? Yes. You too, Papa? And Mama? Yes. And me? Yes, he said. And then he added in Yiddish, but may it be only after you live a long and a good life, my Asher. I could not grasp it. I forced myself to look at that bird. Everything alive would one day die, just like that bird. Why? I asked Papa. Well, that's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world, Asher. Why? So life would be precious, Asher. Something that is yours forever is never precious. This conversation I had just a week ago for my birthday weekend with a little 5-year-old grandson named Wesley. He was asking about death. And then he said, are you going to die, Grandpa? I said, yes, I am. And then he took a little time and, what about Grammy? I said, no. Mommy? Daddy? Yes. Wesley? And then some time, what about me? And I said, you too. And then but life is precious. Hold on to it. And as he says, something that is yours forever. Well, I guess the point is that we will never be able to generously give what we cannot with humility receive. It's an important line there. We need to be open to receive from our elders because they have so much to give us before our time comes. We never know when we will meet our demise. For some, it may be when they are enjoying being in full light of popularity, for others when they have been totally forgotten. For some, it may be when they have reached the peak of their strength, and for others when they become weak and powerless. For some, it may be when their creativity is in full bloom, for others when they have lost all confidence in their potential. The truth is, in order to love others fully, we must be capable of loving ourselves. Likewise, in order to fully give, you must be willing to fully receive from others, especially our elders. With this in mind, we can enter into solidarity with all human suffering, and likewise with all human growth. Amen.